Hello, everybody. Welcome or welcome back to B&B Anime. Specifically, welcome back to Anime Island, the show where I strand, metaphorically, of course, my illustrious guest on a deserted island where I give them at least the basic bare necessities of, you know, food, water, shelter, all of that, because I am not such an ungrateful prick to not give them that. But also, I give them a choice of three anime, a book, a film, an album, and a video game to take with them, because luxuries are nice. I mean, I'm inconveniencing them by stranding them on a deserted island, so the least I could do is give them a few luxuries. Anyway, my guest for today is a longstanding individual in the lives of this podcast. It's actually one of the reasons why Blue and I got into the podcast game, because he was gracious enough to have us on the podcast of his own, has been a podcaster for years at this point. David from Tales of the Fandom, how are you, my friend?
I am doing relatively well. I'm just settling in for the night with a big old cup of coffee and getting to hang out with you.
I seem to hear quite often about the whole settling down for the podcast game with a cup of coffee, because that is definitely Blue's thing as well. Every time we sit down, she's got a huge mug of coffee and it's just ready to go. So I feel like that's just kind of the common theme here of the late night recordings.
Absolutely. It keeps, you know, it at least keeps me going for a good hour or two, and then I just got to keep pushing through after that.
I get that. I guess the thing for me is, with having ADHD, coffee does basically nothing other than like quell the ADHD just a little bit to like keep it calm, which sounds very counterintuitive considering, you know, caffeine is a stimulant, but
right.
Dude, I can down an entire energy drink and then go straight to bed. Like it does nothing for me at this point.
Yeah, at this point, it's more of a, you know, it's a routine type of thing. I can go without coffee, but I just, it's nice and warm and soothes the throat, especially when, you know, we're talking for a good chunk of time here.
Oh, exactly. Coffee's great for that. And actually, thanks to Blue, I've really started to enjoy tea over these past few years.
Well, that's because she's Canadian and therefore tied to the British people that love tea.
Yeah, it also doesn't help that she's also part British, considering she grew up there for the first 10 years of her life.
Yep.
So it just got worse, you know, moving to the great maple leaf of North, and everything from there has just went downhill to where it has rubbed off on me way too much. In fact, I think I've got a coffee cup with a maple leaf on it somewhere around here. Yeah, it's back there on my dresser that she sent me. It's never been used because I can never be brought down to such standards. However, it's a great gift and I appreciate it.
I mean, why don't you just pour some maple syrup in there?
You know what? I could 100% do that. But I'm also not a fan of maple syrup. I'm just not going to tell her that.
You didn't hear that on this podcast.
Nope, 100% not. Blue, if you're listening to this, no, you fucking didn't. So I guess my first question going into this is, what got you into anime?
Holy guacamole. That's a loaded question. And I've got kind of like different time stamps or dates of anime times. So I was born in 79. So there was definitely a chunk of time where I remember watching like Astro Boy when I was very young, or like Voltron when I was very young. Things like shows of that nature that are like anime, but they were kind of like mainstreamish at the time. And I mean, Voltron, I wouldn't call Voltron an anime, but it came from Japan. Mm-hmm. So then like there was that. The main time that I really remember anime was 1993, when they announced that Sailor Moon was coming to Cartoon Network, and it was in our local newspaper of all things. Like, this was a huge deal about Sailor Moon coming, coming to Cartoon Network, and Toonami was starting up right around some, like, I don't know if Toonami started right then, but it was starting up. And in high school, I was one of those kids that hung out with, you know, I the nerds and geeks of the world. And one of my friends was someone who would get tapes mailed to him from Japan of anime. And so I saw, like, Sailor, like Japanese versions of Sailor Moon, and saw Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball. I don't even know what iteration it was back in the early mid 90s. So did that. And then I guess in college, I had another resurgence of anime through my friends who would show me things like Prince of Tennis or Love Hina or Azumanga Daioh. And from there, that was like the kickoff point for me to start discovering the anime that I was interested in or I would check out. But it's been a while. I will say it's been a while for me to dive into anime recently.
Well, for one, I appreciate you taking the opportunity to dive into anime with me, but touching on a lot of those subjects, Astro Boy is very well noted, at least kind of common day, as kind of like the godfather of mm-hmm. anime in a sense, because it's always kind of looked at as the initial, you know, big branding of Japanese animation, or at least like mainstream Japanese animation. And then you had the 90s boom of things like Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball / Dragon Ball Z, because I think Dragon Ball might have began releasing in like late 89, and then Dragon Ball Z was like 92-93-ish, maybe. I'm not, my dates could be way wrong. Again, I'm just anime idiot over here as far as it comes to stuff like that, and I could be getting dates mixed up with the English release dates mm-hmm. as well, as far as when they crossed over into the States. But man, talking about, you know, Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball, some of my earliest memories are going to Blockbuster and having to choose between the newest Sailor Moon or Dragon Ball VHS that was available that week, because I could only pick one, because my parents would never let me get more than one, because I needed to actually go outside and touch grass. Heaven forbid I stay in and watch anime movies and all weekend.
As a former Blockbuster employee, the anime section, you know, could always be really hit or miss, because I remember there was like, there's anime, especially like anime movies, where you'd get like the tapes where it has like three or four episodes in, but they would be just trash. And it's like, what is this? Where did this come from?
Oh, dude, I remember it was, don't remember how old I was. I know I was in elementary school time period. And I went to Walmart and my grandmother bought me a Yu-Gi-Oh! VHS. And I was so excited. I'm like, yes, I finally get to continue the story from where I left off, from where the last episode was on TV, because mm-hmm. they were taking a break for some reason. I don't know. And also, you talked about, you know, Cartoon Network and Toonami, and how, let's be real, they were really bad about release schedules whenever it come to like being concurrent on when they were releasing things at times.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted to know what was going to happen next. And I got, it was like one episode, I think, was all that was on the tape. And it was, God, I don't even remember how much VHS tapes were. There was one episode on it. And I was just like, what is this? What? Why? We spent so much money and all I got was one episode. I have never felt so disappointed as I was at that point, because it just barely continued on with wherever I was.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Videotapes back in the day. It cracks me up because, and it's like a Blockbuster for people that didn't know at the time, like for videotapes coming to Blockbuster, if they weren't being sold at the same time to normal consumers, like, you know, I think they might have been like $19.99, $24.99, somewhere around there. Blockbuster would pay, generally speaking, $100 per tape. Way back when, so they would get, you know, you'd be spending 30 times 100, so that's like $3,000 for 30 tapes. So that's why it's like you need to have that turnover to pay down. It takes like 20 or 30 rentals of one tape to cover that cost, and then they start making money on it. And it's like it was crazy back then, and like some of those things where, you know, like the anime stuff, if there definitely weren't being retail sold at that time, so it's just like, please let people rent and watch this.
I mean, I 100% get that, and I know at least at our Blockbuster there always seemed to be some sort of turnover, because there was always something different there for me to pick through whenever I would go. But there were a lot of times where it's like, I just want to re-rent, or I can speak, I just want to re-rent what I had, and they're like, nope, it's on a waiting list, sorry. And I'm like, damn it, just let me have it longer, please.
Exactly.
But I get it, because they need the turnover, and especially because I guess the more people that kind of get their hands on it, the more word of mouth spreads, and it's better for business that way. So I get it. But I guess before we get into more of the specific things, let's talk about podcasting for a minute. What got you into the podcast game?
Well, let's see here. As of it's March 24th now, so coming up on June will be 8 years of doing the podcast. And so 8.5 years ago, I was like kind of looking for something to do. My kids were really young at the time. My wife worked on nights and weekends usually because she was a labor and delivery nurse. So I couldn't go do the things that I would normally do, which is I love role playing and I love tabletop gaming, and I'd love to sit at a table and game. Unfortunately, I can't do that if the kids are needing me to be obviously in the house while they're asleep, because they were, again, young. And I said, there's Blue Yeti microphones on Black Friday sale on Amazon. Wouldn't it be super awesome if I started a podcast and made friends that way? Because then I wouldn't have to leave my house, and I could talk to people about the things that like I'm into, or maybe that they're into. And that was the start of it, was I wanted to make friends and couldn't leave the house to do so. And here we are almost 8 years later, and I'm still doing it, just with not a Blue Yeti. The Yeti microphone is now on a shelf ahead, like on top of my office space, fondly remembering the times where it would pick up like every noise in the house and outside of the house and phone calls from other rooms, and until I was like, oh, you know what? There's better microphones out there for that. But yeah, it is mainly I wanted a way to connect with people and make friends. And for the most part, I think I've succeeded on that. Not everyone is a person I'm a friend with, as far like the, you know, acquaintances and such.
Yeah.
But I have built many a great friendship from doing the podcast, and it's more than I could have ever asked for.
I 100% get where you're coming from. This whole getting into the podcast journey was something that I know I never foresaw. It was just kind of something that Blue and I thought about doing on a whim. I don't remember when her initial episode with you was, but
let me pull that up. One moment, please, while I process your request.
Hey Siri, when was this released? No, I don't actually. No, I don't want you, Siri.
Well, that would have been June 24th, 2019. And that was when, you know, back when Blue was streaming and stuff. So, you know, that was 5 years ago almost.
Wow. Interesting. Wow. Time flies. But also, yeah, that was around the time whenever she was still streaming, and that was right before we decided to, you know, I guess start to put a plan together about the podcast. So that does track. But yeah, it was, again, podcasting was never something that we just wanted to do. We just, I guess, wanted an outlet to just kind of sit and talk about anime and hope maybe that people would listen. It's like, I guess you and I discussed in the the last episode where I was on yours, where we just talked about how it's weird screaming into the void and hoping people listen. And yep. yet if people have listened and continue to listen, and it still baffles me, especially the transition that BNB has went on over the years, from how we went from an incredibly like well regimented and structured system to where now, dude, I'm not gonna lie, we might talk about the anime that we're covering for 5 minutes out of an hour and a half long episode. It's real bad, but it just, I don't know. And just being on your podcast gave me such a want to do mm-hmm. something like this, because it's such a blessing to have people just come on and chit chat about anime to, I guess, give fresh perspectives over the nonsense that Blue and I enjoy and talk about, and just to hear what, you know, people like I've found new anime that I've really enjoyed, or my first guest for the season, Melissa, I found a book series that I really enjoyed mm-hmm. because of her episode, and I've made better friends with individuals from having them on here. And it's just, it really is awesome to have the opportunity to get and do this. But I guess touching back with the whole role play and tabletop side of things, what about that kind of got you into that narrative of things? Because I know we talked about tabletop a little bit and what got me into the tabletop role playing a bit whenever I was a guest on yours. So what got you into that scene?
My mom ran one of those mall kiosk like tchotchke things back when I was early high school, like late middle school, early high school. So on the weekends I would be like, oh, you know, I'll come hang out at the mall with you for, you know, a good 5 or 6 hours. And I would find myself at B. Dalton or Walden Books in their science fiction fantasy section with the role-playing books, reading the role-playing books, admiring like the artwork that was in them, occasionally picking them up. Never played them. Never, for all of high school, never played Dungeons & Dragons or anything like that until I got into past community college, into like, you know, the 4-year second part, the last 2 years of the 4-year degree, so to speak, of a real college. And I was like, hey, I think it's time that I could play I can play some games now. And I emailed somebody in they put something up on a website back in the day looking for group, and found a group of people and got into playing Dungeons and Dragons and Star Wars and Vampire and Werewolf and Mage. And from there, it just kind of expanded. And I've had the opportunity to play a few different games, and I have a collection of games off to the side in the library that we have of some of the role-playing stuff. And I really enjoy getting to play different characters and roll dice and have fun at a table. Haven't really done it too much on the online space. I know it's evolved, especially within like the past 5, 6, 7 years, maybe one day. But I really love the creativity that comes from having a group of people working together to like achieve a common goal, like saving, you know, the universe from an evil overlord, or, you know, political machinations of vampires in the night. Star Wars, of course, is, you know, that's the whole, yeah, if you don't know Star Wars, I'm, you know, it's galaxy stuff. So, but yeah, it's a lot of fun, lots of, you know, great highs and lows, and see what happens with the dice, and it changes the story that can be told. And it's a lot of fun for me. I really enjoy it.
So what has been your favorite character that you've ever played in a TTRPG?
Oh gosh, I have a favorite character. It was in an Eberron campaign. So for those who are unaware, Eberron is a setting in Dungeons and Dragons where there's a whole different like specific stuff that's going on. My hook that got me hooked onto it was I got shown a picture of a halfling, which is like a hobbit, a halfling riding a velociraptor. And I was like, oh, damn, that's pretty awesome. I would love to play that. And so I had a halfling who was back in the 3.5 days of Dungeons and Dragons. It was like a crazy multi-class of barbarian and ranger and fighter. So it was like this 3 foot tall killing machine who eventually I did get a velociraptor to ride, swallowed by a T-Rex at one point, and you know, fought my way out of the T-Rex's stomach, jumped on, they have trains called lightning rails because they're powered by lightning elementals underneath them, jumping from one train car to the next and taking off someone's head like because I did a critical and killed them, so that's how it happened. By far my favorite typical character, that was my favorite. I still love what we were able to do with that game and the story and our characters, and holds a special place in my heart.
That sounds like so much fun. I absolutely love the idea of a halfling riding a velociraptor into battle and just kicking the shit out of everything around it.
Yeah, that setting for because they have, so the halflings, they have like the city halflings that are typical halflings, so to speak, but the halflings that come from a specific area are kind of nomadic, and they wander like this tall grassy plains, and they use dinosaurs as their modes of transportation. So they do have like triceratops and like ankylosauruses, and use them as beasts of burden rather than horses and anything else. And then the warriors use like velociraptors, or they have the ones that are flying on the pteranodon, so to speak. And it's like that kind of thing. That's what drew me in. I was like, I love that idea of them just like wandering around, and then they have like a big meeting every year to decide like who's going to be in charge of like the whole tribes and all sorts of stuff. It's good times.
That's really cool. And something like that is honestly something I hope I have the opportunity as a dungeon master to give my players, is something like you just discussed, of giving them a moment like that that they'll always just remember, or a campaign like that that they'll always just remember. Because I don't know if I discussed it on the episode that I was on with you or not, but the way that my last campaign ended with my players killing off my big bad six sessions into what should have been like a 20 or 30 session campaign and ending it. Because we were playing Curse of Strahd, and they killed off Strahd six sessions in.
I think you were just about to start up Strahd, so I guess it's over now.
Yeah, it ended so very quickly. But it, oh man, it's just the moment of them actually getting the kill. For one, like blowing my mind with it, because I had every intention of having him run away. Like I had the players each roll a D4 for whenever things were going to happen in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so my cousin, she had the final turn before Strahd ran away. He had 67 hit points and she crit for 69. And I was just like, how do you want to do this? And with that, like, my table erupted. I'm surprised the neighbors didn't call the cops from how loud that table just exploded from that. It was moments like that where it's just like, wow. Like, I had no clue D&D could elicit such a reaction like that out of people. And so hearing that story with you and, like, the impact that left on you as a fond memory, it's just like, I want nothing more than to create stuff like that for my players, because it's just, there's something about that that's just so special, especially for my group that had no intentions of ever actually playing Dungeons and Dragons. They just kind of humored me by letting me DM a campaign, and then they all fell in love with it to the point to where once Strahd ended, they were all like, hey, when's the next one? And so Blue and I had to scramble to create a fantasy world from scratch, because I didn't want to be tied down by a module. Right. So we created like an entire world with countries and, you know, wars and underlying factions and all this other stuff. And it's like, hey, all right, y'all enjoyed Strahd. Well, here, have a sandbox, build a castle or some shit. I don't know. Like this can truly be y'all's story now. Have fun. That shackles are off, everyone moving forward. So yeah, I'm gonna have to keep that in mind, because I want to give my characters a velociraptor now. Oh, we're also not going to talk about how I ordered some model ships and I have them in my closet behind me for if they ever decide to do a sailing arc. I have actual props for them to play.
Nice.
With. Oh, but I had something else I was going to touch on with that, and then my brain was just like, nope, not having it. We're going to focus on D&D. I guess getting back to podcasting a little bit more before we jump into, you know, the anime portion of this. What have been, I guess, some of your favorite moments as far as podcasting goes? And then what's kind of been some of the more, I guess, lamentable bits of doing this? Because I know doing this, like, I'm sure you've had your ups and downs with this, just like Blue and I have. So I'm curious just kind of, you know, what your experience have been and just kind of, you know, your biggest ups and downs with it.
Oh gosh, my biggest ups are I would say when people recommend other people the podcast, and not even just, I guess, like not just recommending to listen to the podcast, but and I'll share this story because it's really super recent, is that whenever somebody's anniversary comes up of having their episode come out, I always just say, you know, hey, it's your X number of year anniversary. Thanks for being a guest. I really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your stories. So I did that with a previous guest, and I was like, you know, hey, thanks. I really enjoyed having you on and getting to have your, you know, you share your stories, and then for the relationship that we've had since then. So she was like, I think that this person that I know would be a wonderful guest, and let me introduce you to them. So that way they can get on your podcast. So I was like, well, damn, like, you know, like that's really high praise, like of somebody recommending a different person to like come on the podcast is just like incredible. Or when somebody listens to like one of their friends on the podcast and then they reach out, it's like, hey, I heard my friend on the podcast. Can I be on the podcast? And 99% of the time I'm like, absolutely, because it cuts down on me having to source my guests and do what I do to get information on the guests and everything. It's like coming straight to me. That's wonderful. Or I guess the other thing is when like I've been had blessed the opportunities to like record with people that are like from like actual movie, like actors and directors. And it's like, I don't know how you found the podcast. Like, cause they never tell me that. They just like show up in my email and are like, hey, we're doing this thing and we're doing like a promo tour, and would you like to do this? It's like, absolutely, I would love to do that. So it's those moments that I think are just like the incredible highs of that. I get incredible highs from when I send an email out and they say, I would love to be a guest. Of just like, I've been following them for 6 months, a year, give or take. And it's like, I think they'd be a great guest. So I reach out and they say yes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's happening, or it hopefully it will happen, because sometimes, you know, things get lost and it takes some time. But yes, like that always sends me over the moon excited about doing the podcast. As far as downtimes, burnout's a big thing. I do get burned out. I'll edit two or three episodes at a time, and then just like, I don't want to do editing again. I get anxiety before every episode of, as we get closer to the day of recording, it builds up like, I can't believe I'm doing this. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should cancel. Maybe I should reschedule. You know, there's a lot of self-sabotage, and I have self-sabotaged many a time to where it's like, gosh, people just hate me. They won't want to do this. But you know, sometimes like, oh, it turned out really great, and I'm really happy I didn't like shoot myself in the foot with this. And then, you know, I think for me, one of the biggest lows, and it's something that as I've been doing this again for almost 8 years, is that there are guests who I recorded with and I was close to and I had friendships with, and it like exceeded beyond just like having them as a guest, but like, you know, Facebook friends and emailing and talking back and forth. They just kind of disappeared. Like, they left social media. They left doing what they were doing because their life changed and moved them into a different direction. And I think that's one of the hard things for me to reconcile with, is like, I miss them. I miss talking to them. I miss having our conversations. I miss getting to like chit chat about like what shows they're watching or what shows like or movies that they're into or how their life is going. So I think that's probably like my biggest, like, I guess, sad part about doing the podcast, is that, you know, things change, people change, and it happens, and it is what it is.
I understand that all too well, having been in the creator space now for just shy of 10 years. Like, I'm less than 2 weeks away from my 10-year anniversary streaming on Twitch. It always feels weird thinking about where I started on the platform to where I am now, and some of those initial followers and chatters that I had that are no longer around. It mm-hmm. kind of, like, it just kind of makes you sit back and think, like, I, you know, I do miss them, and I hope they're okay, because those initial people, like, they're, you know, they're part of the reason as to why I continue to do that in a way, like, it, because they were just, I don't know, like, they were just kind of those constants to where now that they're not around, it's just like, I do miss them, or just, I don't know. And like you said, like, people change, they move on, they move away. And having been in the creator space as long as, you know, you and I both have, what's the saying? Like, you know, you're a completely new person biologically every 7 years, like, all of your cells are replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And people change over time as well. And I think a part of that has to do with that change as well. Maybe. I'm not sure. I only studied psychology for like 5 years. I can't remember. But it's just always been one of those things I just kind of think about, just like, wow. Like, I do miss those initial people, and I do hope that they're okay and doing better. So I do get that from a, you know, kind of down point of being in the space. And burnout is also real. I feel like that's one thing that isn't talked about enough as creators, is just like, hey, burnout is real. So you gotta, you know, you gotta kind of do whatever you can to protect yourself from it. Like you said, you'll do two or three episodes and then you'll just kind of leave it alone for a while. And I'm like, I got to that point with the podcast. That's why the YouTube channel went from, you know, weekly uploads to absolutely nothing for a mm-hmm. year and a half. And now we have an episode or something going up every single day because the motivation is back.
Right.
But yeah, it's just burnout is so, so real. It happens to all of us. So if you're out there listening to this and you're dealing with burnout, like, hey, it happens. It gets better. just, you know, take you a break, take you a mental health day or week or however long you need to take to feel better, because it does happen to all of us. It's so real.
Yep. It's why I take off the entire month of December as far as releasing episodes. I still record for the next year, mm-hmm. but no new episodes come out in December. There was a point where I almost quit doing the podcast completely, and I was out for almost three, I think it was like 2 or 3 months. And my wife was like, you need to make a decision on what you're going to do. If you're going to keep doing it, keep doing it. If you're not, then don't. But like, stop talking about like going back and forth, you know, waffling on it and being a thing. Like, just make a decision. So I made the decision to come back and keep doing it. But yeah, it's a thing where if I ever got podcast money, which doesn't really exist for like my level of what I do, besides paying for like web hosting and the stuff that I do, mm-hmm. The first thing I would do is hire an editor to edit the podcast. But you know, editing, people that edit podcasts for a living is like at least $30 an hour, and that's something that is not in my budget, so to speak.
Yeah, no, same. That's kind of one of the things that Blue and I were talking about for the year, is like hopefully getting the YouTube monetizable. Mm-hmm. And it's like, sure, that's cool and all, but also, like, if we did do that, it's like I would probably take whatever my share is and try to actually get an editor, because editing is probably the worst part about yes. this. Like, it's the part that burns me out more than anything, is having to sit and stare at a screen of audio waves. Or hell, now Blue finally has a PC again, so she's taken over the audio editing. So I've literally become a full-time video editor at this point. Like, I've been staring at Premiere pretty much nonstop after I've gotten off of work, just editing videos and trying to get through that entire backlog, because whenever my PC fried early last year and I had to, you know, reformat it and rebuild, and I lost all the video assets, like, I'm not gonna lie, that killed my motivation, my drive, my yep. everything, whatever it came to this, to where like there was a spell of 5 or 6 weeks, like even regular podcast episodes didn't get uploaded because I was just so depressed and burnt out on everything, because I couldn't recreate the assets that I had. So finally, towards the end of last year to the start of this year, whenever Blue and I were talking about plans for the year and like laying out the plans for Japan and everything, I was like, you know what? I'm tired of feeling sorry for myself. I'm going to just turn everything around as much as I can. I went and I commissioned so much artwork, like $400 or $500 worth of artwork for videos and assets and stuff like that, to where it's just like, okay, I'm going to use this as just motivation to get through it. And now by the end of this week at time of recording, I should have the entire backlog of videos completely finished.
Wow.
To where hopefully I can take a break, which I'm so thankful that Blue has taken on the audio editing, so that way I can hopefully fix this and, you know, kill my bit of burnout, because my goodness, it has been a time for the past year. So yeah, the burnout's real. So you gotta do what you can to protect yourself. And I for one will say I'm glad that you made the decision to keep podcasting, because again, you're like, having been a guest on your episode not just once but twice, having that opportunity to sit down and chat with you, like, it's such, I don't know, I guess what the right word for this is, but it really was such an pleasant and eye-opening experience to take part in that, because you are such a phenomenal host with how you talk and interact with people. And it really is like, it almost feels like we're just sitting on a couch shooting the shit in a way. Like, it's just, it's so much fun to take part in. So again, I'm glad you're still around and in the game, because you get to, you know, give that experience to others and give people an outlet to just sit and talk about their favorite things, because it's just nice to know that there are creators out there that, you know, are really passionate about what they do and want to talk about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, all right. I guess moving on to the main portion of what this whole show is about. You are allowed to take three anime with you to this deserted island. So what is your first offering to the table?
Well, it's one that I recommended to you when you were on the second episode back in January. Mm-hmm. My number one will always be, and forever, Azumanga Daioh, because I love those girls. I love the everything. All 20, I think it's 26 episodes. I love it all. I will rewatch those at any time I need a pickup, anytime I need just something lighthearted and funny, that will be my forever number one.
And how did you stumble across that? Because I know during the episode we talked a little bit about the anime and you sent it to me. I have every intention of watching it actually. So Blue and I have started a new thing with Melissa to where whenever we watch something that the guests talked about for Anime Island, if we cover it on the podcast, we ask people to be a returning guest, or I guess like an actual guest to the BNB anime episode to join us in reviewing it. So if we do that, would you be interested in coming on for that to talk about it, review it with us?
Well, of course. And that would just mean that I would, have to watch it again, which, I have so many things to watch, but, I do get into my time of like, hey, let me rewatch stuff. Again, I haven't been in my anime for a while, but it's on my hard drive and it will forever be on my hard drive.
So how did you stumble across that?
Well, this is all going back again to my friend Max, who listened to some of your BNB anime episodes at this point, and he listened to your episode. So Max was a college friend of mine. We got together around 2001 ish, give or take. And he was into a lot of anime, so he introduced me to a number. So Max introduced me to a lot of anime, all sorts. He was very influential for the anime space for me, and so that was one of them. He had the Azumanga Daioh, I believe. I don't think it was out on DVD or whatever it may have been out on, but he introduced me to it, and I fell in love with it, and the rest is history.
That's awesome. It's always fun to hear what people's favorites are and kind of how they got into the genre and what kind of influenced them around that. You feel like that show kind of skewed your taste in anime in any way to your preferences, or is it, just kind of you enjoyed it, but you're still just going to kind of watch whatever you want to watch type situation?
I'll generally try. Generally, if somebody recommends me an anime, I'll do my best to watch it. Mm-hmm. But no, I will take everything. I don't think having Azumanga Daioh as my number one skews in any particular direction. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think that for the time and space that I was in, and then just, I think there's that connection that will forever tie me to me and anime, and that, that's really just how it is. But I will try everything if I have the opportunity and chance to watch it.
Mm-hmm. I got you. So for the next little bit, you're also allowed to take a book and an album. So what book would you want to take with you?
Oh, gosh. See, now it's like choosing children, because it's hard because can you say I want this? Well, one of the things that I've been trying to do is get back into reading the past couple of years. And I've mm-hmm. only been I would typically read one book, and it would be whatever Rick Riordan had released that year. So, I'm a big Percy Jackson fan. I love the stuff that he does, and I try to read the books that like some of my friends get published, and so I do that. But like one, if I had to take one book, let me ponder that for a moment. I've got to take one book. You know, I'm not going to try to like, you know, weasel my way and be like, well, I can take a trilogy of books. That's one book, right? Because it's not.
Really, I mean, I you have leeway here. If you want to take a trilogy, then you can take a trilogy. Don't let me stop you from having a good time on this deserted island.
See, and then it's like, well, can I use the book for fire? But you know, that'd be tragic. Gosh, one book to rule them all. It's not Lord of the Rings. I would absolutely be like, yeah, you know what? Let me take Lord of the Rings, because I think that would be like, it's a lot. But it's been a long time since I've read Lord of the Rings. Man, one book. You know what? I'm gonna go probably a different route than most people, which I would take the Eberron campaign setting 3.5 from Dungeons and Dragons. That would be my book, because it gives you so much creativity in the setting and the backgrounds and stuff that's going on. Even if you got rid of all the crunchy game mechanics that go along with Dungeons and Dragons, you get rid of that, you still are left with 2/3 of a book that is just really an in-depth kind of like lore primer, current stuff going on, ideas for like different things that are happening. And I think that would probably be a good book for me to have and to enjoy. Because for me, I haven't gone back and reread any books in a long time. So it's really tough to say like, oh, well, this book or this book. But yeah, I think I would go with that.
That is such an incredibly unique yet fantastic choice, because it gives you the opportunity to create your own books in a way. Like, absolutely. Immerse yourself in your own fantasy world of your own design while having all of the building blocks that you need to actually create that. Oh, that's awesome. I love that so much.
I'm happy to oblige. Happy to oblige.
Oh, man. I like that a lot. That is absolutely fantastic. And then you also get to take an album. So what do you want to take for that?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I was about to say something. I was like, you know what? I can go with this album. Cause I love my classic rock. I love my Leonard Skinner. I love my Fleetwood Mac. I love the Eagles, and I would take any of their albums any day, but I'm not going to do it. So I'm sorry to all of you great institutions of music. I would take Howard Shore's Fellowship of the Ring soundtrack. No questions asked.
Interesting. All right. That's the first time we've ever got a soundtrack for this. I like that a lot.
My first CD that I ever bought was a soundtrack. Most of the music that I listened to in high school, if I wasn't influenced by one of my friends, because he, like, a friend in high school is the one who got me into all the Southern and classic rock. But before then, I was soundtracks. Like, my first CD purchase was Macross Plus anime soundtrack. My like more soundtrack, you know, Star Trek soundtrack, Star Wars soundtracks, Jurassic Park soundtrack. So it's like I was a soundtrack person until senior year of high school, when I started getting into the classic rock and some of the other music that he was into. And so I kind of picked up his musical tastes and got into it that way. But oh yeah, soundtracks are what power my life.
I 100% get that. It was never such a huge thing to me growing up. At least that I remember, until I watched the anime that got me back into anime, which was Your Lie in April, because I did not realize a soundtrack could just get me so emotional to where now all I need is the piano riff from the main backing soundtrack from that show, and I just immediately get teary-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's because of that that got me so curious about OSTs and stuff like that. I only have two full-on soundtracks downloaded on my phone. It's The Last of Us and Stardew Valley soundtrack, which are two bafflingly different OSTs. And yet, both of those games are some of my favorites of all time, and we're not going to talk about the sheer amount of anime OPs and EDs that I have downloaded, but just as far as overall soundtracks, those are the only two, but I find myself listening to things like the Lord of the Rings soundtracks or even the Dark Souls soundtracks, like those types of soundtracks, or just fantasy world type soundtracks like that are always just so fun to listen to because they have such a wide variety of music that can fit so many different settings. So I get that, and I can 100% respect that decision because that would give you such a wide variety of entertainment. Like, oh yeah, I 100% get that without a shadow of a doubt.
Yep. Yep. It is one thing. Soundtracks are one thing where, so when I was first starting out in the podcast space, there's a podcast that had started right around the same time, and we were in the same Facebook groups, and they did a review of, I don't even remember what it was. They did a review of one of the, a movie. And I was like, how could you not talk about the soundtrack? And from there, like that comment led to a great friendship with them and us crossing over multiple times on each other's podcast. But it was like that one comment. I was like, how could you forget about the music? You spent, you know, an hour talking about the movie and the characters and the plot, but the music, like, you have to talk about it.
And that's one of the main things that I try to not let Blue and I forget whenever we're talking about our, you know, whatever anime we're covering week to week, is just because the soundtrack can be so influential to a story. Or I've also seen some where the soundtrack just detracts from the story as well. Like, it can be such a huge make or break moment for what's going on screen. So it's so incredibly important. So I 100% get where you're coming from with that. And so moving on to your second anime choice, what you got?
Oh my gosh. Okay, second anime choice. Well, I already went with my number one, so I can't choose Azumanga Daioh again.
I'll take 1, 2, and 3 copies of this, please.
I'll take enough copies to make sure that if you know I need to, one gets ruined, I have another copy. Oh gosh, see, like, now I feel like I need to pull up like my anime list of like stuff I've watched, man. You know, there's animes that I've watched where I'm like, you know, that'd be a great anime, but I wouldn't want it on a deserted island with me, because it would like make me sad or depressed. It's like, no, that's okay. Okay, so second anime. You know, I think I will go, and I know that I'm leaning into Blue's territory here, and I don't think I've ever finished the anime because it was still going when I started fading out of anime, but I think I'd go Prince of Tennis because it's got a dearth of episodes. There's a number, like lots of episodes out there, a number of incredible characters that you get to follow. And I think that would probably be a good solid second choice.
Yeah, I can 100% get behind that, because as someone who has seen at least the first, like, core and a half of Prince of Tennis, I can get that, because there is a wealth of episodes to sit through and get behind, and a litany of fun arcs and things to watch and sit through. So I do get that, and you know, I understand its importance to you as well, because that was one of the things that you and Max, right?
Yep, Max, yep.
that y'all watched in college and kind of bonded over. So I 100% get that. I'm going to have to tell Blue that her territory is being encroached on.
Listen, she can keep the main character all she wants, because I do not like the main character. I'll take all the other characters,
though. Oh, not a... Oh, goodness. What is his name? Because it's been forever since I've seen it. Is it Etchison Ryoma?
Yes, right? Ryoma Etchison. Yes.
Yeah. All right. I do remember something.
Him. Yes, I cannot stand him at all.
All right, where does the disdain for Ryoma come from?
You know, I think part of it is, you know, just he's that cocky, you know, I'm a whatever age he was, you know, I'm that cocky, I can do it all character who's I'm going to be this greatest tennis player of all and whatever. so it stems from that, but I'm not a main character person, so to speak. I love sidekicks and background characters and the ones where, you know, they show up on occasion or they're in the group, but not like the main focus from time to time. I love those kind of characters. So I'm not drawn so much to main characters, so to speak.
Interesting. Has it always been that way, or was it things like Prince of Tennis and like the cocky main character role that just kind of, you know, turns you off to the idea of it?
Well, I mean like with TV shows, I could give you know, like, say, like, example, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean Buffy's fine and all, but I liked Willow, or I like Xander. For other shows, like, you know, staying in the Joss Whedon wheelhouse here, Firefly, I loved Kaylee. It's these, like, I love the characters, but I typically go for maybe the ones that are just off to the side a little bit, or comic relief, or the older, wiser character, like Avatar The Last Airbender. I mean, I love Iroh, but if you don't love Iroh, then there's definitely a problem with you. You know, it's those kinds of things where I'm just kind of drawn to other characters.
I can 100% get that. So I guess taking that point and moving it over to a couple of the other anime that you've talked about during this. So favorite characters from Dragon Ball and Sailor Moon, go.
Well, I don't watch Dragon Ball, so... My apologies to people that have. I don't know anything about Dragon Ball beyond like that there's a character named Goku and there's a green looking guy. I think his name is either Piccolo or Frieza. I don't know. as far as Sailor Moon goes, back in my high school and college days, I would say Mercury for the inners and Pluto for the outers, which Pluto still is typically my number one. I watched Sailor Moon Crystal, so I've caught up on all that. And Pluto is still one of my favorites. But I think Jupiter has kind of edged Mercury out of that like other spot. I really enjoyed what they did with her in Crystal. I liked her back in the original, but I think I liked her more in Crystal. And Not so much Amy or Ami. I kind of, she wasn't really like the one I was super into, but forever Pluto, like, again, typical. She only shows up in a few episodes. She doesn't do much, but like, I love her character design. I love what she did get to do for like all of the you know, few minutes that she's given. So it's things like that.
Interesting. All right, so as someone who is a huge OG Sailor Moon fan and is thrown off by the animation for Sailor Moon Crystal, is Crystal worth watching?
I will say that it took me some time. But this happens with all sorts of like animated shows. Like it will take me time if it's not something that I'm familiar with, or something where I'm like, oh, this is really jarring. Like it can take some time to get into. I think, and I've been told this by other people who are into the Sailor Moon fandom, that season one of Crystal is not good as far as animation goes, and it does get better. And for real, it does get better once you hit like season two. So it the quality gets better, everything gets better once they get into that second and third season, and it's enjoyable. And the things that they did change, you know, worked for the show, and it's a tight. I don't remember how many episodes there are, but it's a tight show. It's not like there's no filler. And I think that's one of the good things is that the filler of the original is like cut out, which I love filler at times, but it can be too much.
I get that. I can understand that. So that's interesting. If it gets better, I may have to actually give it a try. Again, it was too much and too different from the original to where it just kind of turned me off to it, because I feel like they just altered Usagi in a way that just kind of didn't resonate with me like the original did. And yeah, I could be overthinking it and could just have the original like overly idealized in my brain just from like the nostalgic point, to where if I went back and watched it, I'd probably think that she is such a whiny little baby that she just destroys me like the first season of My Hero with the main character does. I physically cannot stand to watch the first season of My Hero Academia anymore just because of how much the main character cries and whines. Like, I detest that with every fiber of my being. So, yeah, if it does get better, I may have to actually give it a chance, because I do have a Sailor Moon itch that needs to be scratched. So we'll see. I may just have to check that out. And so you're also allowed to take a film and a video game with you. So what film would you like to take with you?
Oh, see, why you gotta be like that? That's that's not
cool. I know you're a big film person because you have movie night, what, every Friday, right?
Every Friday we do have a family movie night where we rotate the picks between, you know, everyone gets a choice, so that way we get to have a wide variety of movies. But the biggest problem is that, again, like I mentioned, I worked at Blockbuster, and every week we'd get 7 free rentals. And on top of that, I would go to the movie theater at least once a weekend and watch, you know, a new movie releasing. And so I am a movie person. That is a very difficult question. People have asked many a time, like, you know, what's your favorite movie? I don't have a favorite movie. It's hard. It's too difficult to choose a favorite movie. Like, give me some criteria here. favorite movie. Like, I would traditionally just say Lord of the Rings, because you're getting like 14 hours of movie for all three. You know, but I'm going to try and narrow it down to one movie. So,
I mean, I also gave Melissa 2, and she went with Titanic and Silence of the Lambs. So,
dang, that's an interesting choice right there.
It was two incredibly interesting picks, but listening to her explain her reasoning why behind them, I 100% get it. Like, I'll stand behind it. So if you're stuck between, you know, one or two or three, you can take however many. You don't have to stick within my rules here. This is your episode.
You know, I've got my choice. I got my choice, and okay. I'm doing it because I always say that I say it's underrated. I believe that if it had come out now, or if it had come out in the past maybe 5 years, even 7 years, somewhere around there, if it had come out recently, it would be held in much higher regard. We would maybe have a live action based off of it, or we'd have like some incredible merchandise or something like that. I'm going to say Atlantis, The Lost Empire by Disney.
Wow. All right. That is... So, for one, that is an incredible pick that I always forget that that's a Disney film.
Yep.
And I had a... I don't know if it was like a PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2 copy of the game that they made for that, But I have such fond memories of that film and that game. So you just opened up an entire floodgate of memories with that. And yes. I wholeheartedly agree. Like it does not get the recognition that it deserves. And I'm honestly shocked that Disney hasn't tried to do more with that, with their, you know, plethora of, hey, let's dig all of this shit out of the vault and re-release it or redo it or make a live action of it, because we're running out of ideas, because they are. It's very apparent with what they're putting out.
It would make a wonderful, like, dark kind of, like, you know, every season's 10 episodes or 13 episodes, something like that. But it would be incredible. But the problem that I would run up against, which is something else that's happening in other remakes and stuff, is that I love the voice, the actors, because they're not all traditional voice actors. I love the actors that played a number of those characters in the animated movie. And it might be too painful for me to not have them be those characters in like a live action setting.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, and it's something that I posted on social media at some point recently, is like, you know, I don't think everything needs a live action version, but could you give us 10 episodes of like an animated show of it, that like this actual quality animation, not 1990s, early 2000s Disney, where you had like the Aladdin animated show or whatever, some of those other animated shows that they had, where it's like, it's not good. Like, I would want like Avatar the Last Airbender quality animation, or even better, but with Atlantis the Lost Empire.
And that, it's Disney. That is entirely possible. And again, I'm honestly shocked they haven't dug that one out of the vault, because I've seen so many people on social media, whether it be Twitter or, you know, Facebook Reels or TikToks, talking about how they want that show to be brought back in some way, shape, form, or fashion, because it's held in such a high regard and it's just never talked about. Like, nobody talks about it in any sort of media.
Yeah, that and the other one that always get tied together is that and Treasure Planet both came out within a couple years of each other, and they both kind of have been like overlooked by Disney. They're very like almost cult like Disney movies of like the current time. Whenever I'm on Instagram and if people like cosplay any of those characters from either of those movies, I'm like, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. Thank you so much for, you know, still having that love for this property, because it, you know, there's no merchandise for either of those out there. You can't really track stuff down unless it's like from when it came out, and they don't have like the characters wandering around or anything. You know, they're like kind of like the forgotten time period between like the Renaissance of like Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and the Lion King. And then you had like Hercules and Hunchback, and then it kind of went into Atlantis and Treasure Planet and a few other movies. And then it picked back up with like the stuff that they're doing now with like Frozen and Encanto and these incredible movies in their own rights. But it's like, those few movies that are in that like one weird space of like, if only they had been at different periods of time, we would be like living the dream with having so much creative content coming out for them.
I wholeheartedly agree. It is such a travesty to not be able to have more from those. So I 100% get that. But yeah, you're also allowed to take a video game. So what you want to take for that one?
All right, let's see here. I'm going to try to take nostalgia goggles off on this one. I love Final Fantasy IV, which is 2 in the United States. Love it so much, but I haven't played it in probably since whenever I was a kid. So I'm going to write that one off. I love Final Fantasy X. I love that game so much. I love Tidus and Yuna and Riku and Auron and all those characters. But I'll put that one to the side. And I will say, and this is probably a controversial one because I'm going to say it, because regardless, I love Final Fantasy. So thank you to everyone who does Final Fantasy stuff. Final Fantasy Tactics Advanced.
Interesting. I know nothing about this. So if you don't care to explain, that would be greatly appreciated.
So Final Fantasy Tactics, which is not my choice, was like, it's a strategy tactics game. It was like, well, like all through the land, and you have all these different classes and characters, and you can change roles and all that stuff. So Final Fantasy Tactics Advanced, you play this kid that is sucked into a Final Fantasy realm with his friends, and you have to like build out like your team and your party, and they have like a few different like races that are all like, there's this one race that is more geared towards like wizards and magic. There's another race that's geared towards like archery. And then you have like this story that's being told. Like the ultimate thing is like, you want to try to get back home, but there's things happening that's standing in your way. So during gameplay, like you're trying to do that. You're trying to go up against like other, I can't remember if it's like clans or guilds of like trying to get stuff and get like bounties and get money to upgrade your equipment and special abilities. And it's really fun. And I think the reason that I would choose it, number one, because it has so much replayability. It's still got like the same story, but you could be like, well, I'm going to do all wizards, or I'm going to do all one other, like a different class or something along those lines. The other thing is that they have like this judge system where it's like, oh, you're like, the judge will come on to the, it's like they're always on that field of battle, and they say like, oh, you can't do X, like you can't heal, or you can't hit somebody with an arrow or something like that, where it's like, oh snap, like now like my whole game plan is ruined, what am I going to do type thing. I think that would be it. And it's also because I played that game. Oh, what? Why am I choosing this game? Hold on. I'm rejecting my choice. I cannot believe I got sucked into my Final Fantasy love when I clearly have another love, which is Animal Crossing. Give me just Animal Crossing. Thank you very much. There's no more need to be said. I will take the OG Animal Crossing on the GameCube, because I have such a fond memory for that. New Horizons, I could do that too, but OG Animal Crossing, I'm going with that. Thank you. I'm sorry, Final Fantasy. I love you so much, but it's Animal Crossing. I don't know what came over me at this point.
Oh, that is absolutely beautiful. I am so here for that. So my only introduction to the Animal Crossing world was New Horizons. So I gotta ask, was the OG GameCube version also just Capitalism Simulator, or is that just New Horizons?
Well, it's in OG Animal Crossing, you had no control over when your neighbors would move in or when they would leave. So you could wake up and be like, where'd my favorite villager go? And there's a letter waiting for you saying, I've decided to move out and leave. Goodbye. It also just had some really fun mechanics. Like, you would have to mail your fossils to a different museum, like a museum that doesn't exist, for them to evaluate your fossils. You could only do 5 fossils a day, and then they mail them back to you. So it was like, you didn't get that instant like, oh, well, you've discovered this and now we're going to throw it into the museum. No, it didn't. It was very, very much a back and forth thing. To upgrade your shop to the highest level, you had to have someone else's Animal Crossing memory card in your slot too, to be able to travel to that person's town. Or no, you had to have someone go to your town. So you would have to like let someone borrow your Animal Crossing memory card to go to your town to buy something. And then that would trigger like the upgrade to like the biggest one. Also, the animals had a lot of like different dialogue. They were mean. They could be mean. There was a lot of like sass that they've definitely toned down as the series has continued. And there's a lot of features that definitely aren't in the original. Like you couldn't stack 9 apples together into one thing. Like you would have, I think, like a total of maybe like 10 or 12 slots. So you'd constantly be going back and forth to like sell your stuff or sell whatever. And you couldn't, there's no decorating outside. Like the only decoration was inside the house. So you could not put stuff out on the ground. You could not do stuff like that. It's really like it's bare bones, but it's just a wonderful game. And if people do ever get the chance to play it, highly recommended.
Interesting. Because I really did enjoy New Horizons whenever I played it. It kind of filled, I guess, the niche that I had because I was burnt out on Stardew Valley, so didn't mm-hmm. feel like playing it at the time, but I needed something similar. So it definitely filled that void. But if I ever find myself, because a GameCube is the only game system that I never owned that I'd wanted growing up. I don't know what it was about it. I don't know if it was the plethora of games or the fact that you could get that attachment to where you could play your Game Boy Advance games up on the TV.
Right.
God, I wanted to do that so bad. I wanted to play Pokemon on the TV and not have to do it in my hands.
And now that adapter costs so much money.
Does it?
Yeah, I think the adapter goes, oh gosh, because you could buy a GameCube for about between 60 to 100, 120. I think the adapter goes for at least 100, maybe upwards of $200.
Holy shit. And that's not including the cost of what those old Pokemon games are going to run you now.
Oh my gosh, I saw somebody trying to sell, like they had posted, they're like, oh, I'm selling whatever the games were. And I guess somebody had messaged them and said, like, you don't realize like your game is like actually worth like $300 or $400. And they're like, I'm taking those off, hey, I'm trying to sell them for like $20 type of thing.
Oh, wow. Wow. And I mean, I don't remember when this was. I think it was pre-COVID. But I remember going to the mall up in Knoxville, and inside they have a game store that's like not a GameStop, but is kind of a GameStop type thing, where they also had a lot of like retro things, and they had in stock an original, like plastic wrapped the whole nine yards, Pokemon Stadium N64, the Japanese version.
Mm-hmm.
So completely sealed, wrapped, the whole nine yards. It's just like, I want it, but it was $400. So I was like, never mind. I don't want it. And now I wonder how much that thing would actually be worth now that the retro game market has boomed even more post COVID.
Yep.
But I just remember seeing that. It's like, I loved Pokemon Stadium growing up, and seeing that, it's just like, I want it, but I don't want to pay for it. Now it's like, I wonder how much it's actually worth.
Yep. It is wild when I think back of like, oh, I had that game. I wish I still had it. Or like I was talking with somebody about Legos. And I was like, oh, you know, I had all these like 1980s Legos way back, you know, when I was a kid, like mid-80s, late 80s. Like worth so much money now if you still had them in like even just like having the box and instruction manual, like so much money. It's like I wish you know I had kept holding on to those, or my action figures or all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you know what my biggest travesty in that market is? Pokemon cards. I had a plethora of those things. And like even like a mint condition holographic Charizard. And I have no clue what happened to them.
Yep. I sold all of my third edition Magic the Gathering cards and all the, like all those Magic cards that I had from like mid-90s to probably like mid to late 90s. Like I sold them all as like I should, like, again, you don't think about it at the time. Now that I'm older, I'm like, I'm going to just hang on to whatever I buy and not sell it unless it's something I really don't want. But gosh, like just holding on to stuff, it'd be life changing.
Yeah, because you never know. And now granted, there's a lot of stuff to where it's just like, I don't care. Like you can see on my shelf behind me, I have pop figures that are out of the box because there are things to where I don't buy them to resell them. I buy them just to display them because I really, really like them.
Right.
But then there are some things to where it's just like, I have comic books that I've never read. I just wanted to collect because for one, they look cool, but two, I could potentially resell them for more money. Like I have an entire, variant print first editions for a run of Deadpool in my closet. And it's just like, I could read those or I could leave them and sell them at some point. I don't know what I want to do them. I just bought them because they look cool and they're cool to display. I'm not going to open them because that would be silly.
Yep.
But you never know with stuff like that. So oh man. But yeah, I may have to get a GameCube at some point and check that out because I am very curious about the differences. And also, like I said, I really just want to own a GameCube at some point.
That's right. You know, and if you don't get a GameCube, you can always try to find a backwards compatible Wii and they play GameCube games.
That is true. Or I could try to destroy my PC and find an emulator for it. Oh,
we won't talk about that. Don't listen to us.
Yeah, no, definitely. Especially Nintendo, you don't hear a fucking thing. Emulators do not exist in any way, shape, form, or fashion, and getting your hands on them is totally not like the LimeWire days of the internet to where what could happen to your PC.
What do you mean this file that I downloaded that was I thought was going to be this song is totally not this song and it's something else entirely?
I made the joke about it the other day. It's just like you download something and it's like you don't know whether you're getting Katy Perry's newest song, a porn clip, or a virus that's going to cripple your computer and you have to factory reset everything. Who knows what you're actually getting until you open it?
Yep. Or you have to download five different versions of the same thing and you hope one of them is actually the correct thing that you want.
Oh my goodness, yes, especially because I had one of the old God, what kind of phone was it that had like the, it was tall but you could also slide it over and it had the full keyboard type thing. That's
like a Sidekick?
Something like that. Yeah, and it had an SD card. So I was on LimeWire like trying to download all the different songs that I could use for ringtones and shit. It was just, oh man. Oh, that poor computer. Oh, I remember my stepdad being pissed because the computer was running slow as hell. It's just like, hey, man, I don't know. It's probably just old. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's what happened to my mother-in-law's computer is that our niece and nephews would come down to like her place for the summer. And by the time they left, she'd be like, my computer doesn't work correctly. It's like, well, you probably have like 10 different viruses on it.
Yeah, the amount of malware that's probably in there now is just absolutely crippling it. Just give me like an hour and I can maybe fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, maybe. So,
yeah, it was doing stupid stuff like that now to where it's just like I refuse to do anything even remotely sketchy with my PC now. I think the most reasonably sketchy thing I've done with it was download mods for Stardew Valley.
Okay.
But that's it. I won't go any further because who knows what could happen to my PC after that.
Exactly. And it takes so long. It's so frustrating to fix.
It really is, especially if you do have to reformat your hard drive. Oh my goodness, the amount of stuff that's lost and time it takes to re-download everything.
Yep.
It's just it sucks. It sucks so much. All right. So the final offering you have for your final anime for the island. What you thinking for that one?
You're really killing me on this. I just want you to know that because, you know, like, again, I like the anime I do watch. It's typically, if I'm watching anime, it's like an anime movie and it's not anime show. And I know I haven't really watched a lot of stuff. Like, I think there's a lot of anime that's come out where I'm like, oh, I'll watch it, but I never did. I'm going to choose this one. I'm going to choose this one for two reasons. Number one, because it's held with such high regard, but I've only watched two episodes of it. So if I'm on a deserted island and I need something new to watch, I will have this show to watch. But the only downside of it is if I'm not into it, I'll be really upset with the people that held it in such high regard. However, I mean, like a bajillion people can't be wrong about it, right? Unless like I just don't get it. I like the first two episodes that I saw. So with that being said, with that preamble, so to speak, I'm gonna go with Cowboy Bebop. And yes, everybody, I know I've only watched two episodes. I am that age range. I don't know how I haven't watched it all yet. I don't understand. You're looking at me. I get it. It's understandable. You're like, hey, how could this guy not have watched Cowboy Bebop when he's watching all this other stuff? That's a great question. I don't know. the problem is, and I will reference my friend Max who came over this weekend and we got to talk, is that when I am doing stuff now, like generally I'm watching stuff and I'm listening to it more than watching because I'm working at the same time, is that I know that Cowboy Bebop has a lot of stuff going on visually, and I don't have the time to sit and just enjoy it for what it is. And I want to make sure I do give the due diligence for it, which is why I've only watched two episodes, and I'll probably have to rewatch them just to get refreshed again. But I enjoyed what was out there. I really like it. And I think it's something where I think I would enjoy it once I got past and was able to just enjoy the whole series.
Cowboy Bebop is one of those that everyone holds in such high regard, and holds it in so much high regard that the Netflix live action adaptation has been shit on so hard. It is unbelievable. I watched Cowboy Bebop growing up. I don't remember too awful much about it. I remember being captivated by it as a younger child, but it's definitely not something that I have revisited in my adult years to where I also think I would have to rewatch it at some point just to kind of refresh myself, to re-remind mm-hmm. myself of the hype around the show. But what I do recall from it, and the overarching story and everything, I really enjoyed it. Like, it was a fun show.
And it has, again, I'm gonna say it, Brad, it's got music. It's got a great soundtrack because I've heard music from it and people tell me, oh, that's from Cowboy Bebop. And it's like, well, damn, that's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that OP is incredibly timeless too. If it's the OP I'm thinking of, that like jazz yep. opening, oh, yep. so good. God, I hope that's Cowboy Bebop.
I just want to say for the record, for people that are listening, I had some other anime that I would have like named, like of course anything by Studio Ghibli, or the one that just popped up in my head, Lupin the Third, another. Mm-hmm. Great classic choice. So don't think that I'm like, you know, some random person just picking stuff. I did want to kind of be more episode centric and have that type of thing rather than just picking movies. But there's wonderful anime movies out there, so you know, go watch them. But yeah, Cowboy Bebop would be a solid, like, hey, it's new to me while I'm chilling out on this deserted island, and getting to enjoy that.
That's very understandable. So one last little side tangent before we wrap everything up. What's your favorite Ghibli film?
Damn it, Brad. Why you gotta be like that?
Hey, you're the one that mentioned Ghibli, so I have to ask, because everybody has a Ghibli film that they adore more than rest. Well, again, it's like picking kids, but everybody has the one that stands out more than others.
Well, I clearly do have one, so I'm just being facetious of my damn it, Brad. But you know, there's definitely some ones, because I didn't get into Ghibli. Like, so again, I worked at Blockbuster, right? So all these kids are renting these movies that I have no clue about. I'm like, I don't know, My Neighbor Totoro. What the heck is that? Like, I wasn't hip back then. I was like, you know, the nerdy other guy that wasn't into that stuff. But like, I remember when, again, in college, shockingly, because it was in the Bible Belt of Florida, we got like Princess Mononoke in the theater. It's like, how the hell did we get Princess Mononoke in the movie theater? What is going on here? So I love Princess Mononoke. However, for my Studio Ghibli pick, it is definitely Kiki's Delivery Service. I really enjoy not just the character, not just the music, but the world that she inhabits, and I want to live where she lives and have that like suburban, urban kind of life, but also like live out in the forest and you know, have witches deliver stuff, and I would like that, please. Thank you.
Kiki's Delivery Service is a phenomenal film, and I feel like it's kind of, at least from my experience, one of the more forgotten ones of the bunch, because everybody talks about Totoro and Ponyo and Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. And Howl's Moving Castle as well, to where I feel like Kiki's is kind of the one that gets kind of tossed off to the side a little bit. And it is such a good film. I adore that film so much.
Well, if you want even deeper cut, I would go if, again, like this is one that takes more time and brain energy. So Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind would be mm-hmm. my second strong choice. I would couch that with, and I didn't even know about this until I was like, again, living in Japan. There's like 8 manga volumes of Nausicaa that expands the world by like a bajillion percent. And they like, I would say if you have the opportunity to like track them down, which I don't even know like if that's even a thing at this point, well worth the investment because of the story that it tells, that just, it's so much more than what you get in like the 2-ish hours of the movie. Just incredible stuff. And I had no clue it existed until I like went to a Japanese bookstore and was like, what the heck? I can't believe this exists. And it's in English and I can read it. Yes.
So not a lot of people know this because I haven't actually talked about this, but I have that film on Blu-ray on my shelf over here behind me. I had no clue that actually had a manga for it, to where now that I know this, I'm going to go on the hunt whenever Blue and I go to Japan, because I don't know if you and I have had the discussion or if we talked about it back in January when we did my episode with that. But Blue and I are going in October. Like, the dates are set.
Yeah. Now.
So I'm going to have to go on a hunt because I need to find this now.
Yeah, it is. I believe it's 8. The price, I think, I'm trying to remember like how it probably was at least 2,000 to 3,000 yen per volume at that time. I don't know what it would be now, if it even is still accessible. I think mine are packed in the garage still at some point. But yeah, it like there's very few properties where, you know, I didn't know about it, and then all of a sudden like you have like imagine Nausicaa the movie is simply one volume, maybe 2 volumes of the manga, and the rest is like everything else that's going on. I would almost equate it to people that love Howl's Moving Castle, but have no idea that Howl's Moving Castle is also a book that goes mm-hmm. into, again, more stuff than what you're getting in the movie. Which again, that's what happens with books, but, yeah, it's an incredible piece of work and highly recommend it.
If I'm able to find it, I will 100% pick it up because you have 100% piqued my curiosity. I definitely would like to be able to take a bigger deep dive into that world, especially mm-hmm. if it's still available while we're over there. So I will keep you updated on that whenever Blue and I go, because I kind of really want to find it now, just purely for, you know, purely for the fact of finding it at this point.
See, now I'm going to look it up. Wow. Okay. So you can actually apparently find it on Amazon. So,
okay.
You know, yeah, it's there. There's seven volumes. You can order it today. You don't even need to go to Japan, Brad. You can just order it on Amazon. There you go. Here we go.
Damn it. Oh no. I guess canceling I'm going to have trip. To. Yeah, I guess I'm canceling that entire trip. The whole hot springs inn I booked the entire thing of, the whole nine yards, just canceling all of that. Yep. Oh, damn it. Whatever.
It's available on Amazon. You don't need to go.
Well, you know what?
Heat up your bathtub.
I'm 6'4". I don't fit in a bathtub. Oh, if there's one thing I hate about being as tall as I am, is I can't take a fucking bath.
As a person who also loves baths and cannot, get into a typical size tub, I feel your pain. And I don't know where you and Blue are planning to go in your Japan journeys. However, if you make it to Osaka, I would suggest going to Spa World, because it is well worth, I believe it's probably like 2,000 or 3,000 yen to enter. Well worth it. Well worth it. You would enjoy it, as long as, you know, you're comfortable being naked around Japanese dudes that are probably going to be like, damn, you are like at least a foot and a half taller than me type thing.
Blue and I have already come to the conclusion that we are going to be stared at like zoo animals while we're over there. Because I'm 6'4", and she's 5'9 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So for one, we will never lose each other anywhere we go, because we will tower over literally everyone else. But also, yeah, that'll... we had thought about going to somewhere like Spa World, but what we ended up doing is I booked an entire hot spring inn in Kyoto.
Oh yeah, that's where I used to live.
Hey, look at that. You got any fun food ideas for places while we're there? Send them my way, because we are going to be on the prowl. But then I also rented an Airbnb for our stay in Osaka that has a hot tub on the roof.
Nice.
So at least for 2/3 of the trip, we will have access to hot tub and or hot spring.
That can fit you.
Yeah, that's the thing. Tokyo, on the other hand, we're not gonna have such a fun time, because we are staying in a tiny hotel room. But we are staying at a hotel that's right on the bay in Chiba.
Okay,
so that's at least fun.
Yeah, you're not gonna be sleeping in a capsule hotel. I don't even know if you could fit in a capsule hotel, Brad.
Yeah, no, so a funny bit about that. So my job has what they call reward points that you can give out to people for doing things of like going above and beyond the regular service and stuff like that. That's all just an internal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can trade those in for stays at, you know, hotels and airline tickets and whatnot. So I was looking if there was any way that I could blow that on the stay in Japan to, you know, help alleviate the cost for Blue and I.
Right.
And the only thing that was available was capsule hotels. And I was like, there is no way in hell my big ass is going to go stay in a capsule. I am claustrophobic. I'm 6'4", built like a fridge. I am not staying in a tiny little capsule thing. No. Hell no. I would spend most of the time in the hospital in shock at that point.
Well, at least your hospital stay would only be like $5.
That is true. That is very, very true. But yeah, capsule hotels are a no-no. As much as thrifting like that would be good for my wallet, mm-hmm. I'll stick with our hotel on the bay.
That's right.
Oh, we went very, very bougie. Or I say I went very, very bougie whenever deciding where we were going to stay. Because I was like, fuck it. It's our first time going. We've always wanted to go. And also, that is a lot of walking that neither of us are just that used to doing. So I'm going to make mm-hmm. sure that we have access to hot springs at all times, pretty much for the last half of the trip, because we're going to be very tired.
Oh, absolutely. That is something, you know, coming back from our trip recently, is that every day was like 10 to 14, at least 10 to 14 miles a day. And it's like, that's what you have with public transportation. You're constantly walking to wherever you need to go, bus or subway or train, and you're constantly walking to your destination of where you're planning to go. And you don't have that here in the States, at least of you know, I'm in Orlando, so everything is far away, and it's, you're constantly driving, and then you just walk into the store and then you walk out, and that's what you're doing.
Yeah, so that's definitely one of those things that there's going to be a lot of getting used to. Now, granted, I walk a lot for work, but it's all like in one central location, and it's still only like 10 to 12,000 steps a day, not like 20 to 25 that Japan mm-hmm. is yeah. going to be. It's going to be, oh goodness, it's going to be a lot.
Well, at least you're going when the temperature won't be, temperature plus humidity won't be too terrible.
Yeah, that was kind of our thoughts on it. Also wanted to get there while the leaves are pretty. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Because Japanese maples are almost beautiful. As stunning as sakura trees from, you know, everything that I've seen and observed.
Mm-hmm.
So big fan of that. And yet I think our next trip will definitely be during sakura season, even though it's going to be very, very packed, but it'll definitely be something that, you know, we'll have to touch base on after we get back, because I'm, you know, I'd like to pick your brain more about your time in Japan.
That was 20 years ago, Brad. 20 years ago is when I flew over to Japan to live for 2 years. It is a long time ago.
Hey, on the flip side, though, that's kind of the dream. That's kind of what Blue and I want, is, you know, to be able to just do the podcast over there and just be there permanently.
Right? Right? You have access to all the animes as they're coming out.
Yeah, it's great. Also, like, all the cheap figures in Akihabara, we want it. We want it so bad.
Exactly. You don't have to do a gacha and figure out, like, oh, I didn't get that one. See, that's the thing right there. That's my little trip advisor. There you go. That's my trip advisor, is you go to the stores that already have them opened and you pay a little bit more, but then you get the figure that you want, and then you're like, well, then you don't have to spend the money on like constantly trying to get the thing that you really want because you got it already.
I'm here for that. I've already come to the conclusion that I'm taking one suitcase and I'm mailing another one back just full of all the souvenirs and shit that I buy.
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to be broke. I'm broke now after spending all of the money to get the tickets and places to stay and all of that. I'm going to be broke coming back because I'm going to buy so much shit that I really don't have room for, but also don't care. I'm going to Japan. I will buy everything.
Exactly. Oh, do it.
I will do it. It's going to be great. I'm so excited. However, with all of that, just kind of, you know, wrapping it up with a nice, neat little bow. David, plug all the things. What you got in the works? Who you got coming up on Tales of the Fandom podcast? Just go crazy. This is your time. Say whatever you want to say. Have at it.
Well, hello there. My name's David. I do Tales from the Fandom podcast. If you haven't guessed it already, we're the podcast is coming up on 8 years on June the 6th of this year. I'm not sure what the anniversary episode is going to look like yet, so that's still in the works. Let's see here. Depending on when you're listening to this episode, the first international guest will have been on the podcast from Serbia. So excited to have my first guest from Serbia there. I have a lot of people that said yes recently to being guests, and they're scheduled for recordings in the next couple months. So the only thing I can say is just Instagram is where I constantly post whoever's coming up in the different months, and then focusing as the episodes come out. So yeah, Instagram is Tales from the Fandom. I'm active on Threads under the same name, Tales from the Fandom. I do not use Twitter anymore, so please do not go and look for me there, because you won't find anything updated as of probably. Well, I did post one thing in January, but I left there in December of 2023 because I cannot support that site anymore. But yeah, you can find the podcast on any of the platforms, the Spotify's, the iHeart, the Pandora, the Amazon Music, your browser, your Alexa. If you want to like ask Alexa to play the episode, it will do that for you. Yeah, you can, you know, I haven't figured out like carrier pigeons and stuff like that, but perhaps one day, you know, you can do that. But yeah, the podcast is out there. It's got a huge backlog. So I guess my thing is that not every episode may be for you, but there is probably an episode that is for you. You just have to find it and figure out like what you're looking for. Typically speaking, the episodes are between 3 to 4 topics, about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes long. Sometimes you get shorter episodes. Sometimes you get episodes focused on one topic. So yeah, it's really all over the place of what people love to share and talk about.
And I cannot recommend it more. David is a phenomenal host whenever it comes to, you know, stuff like that. Is absolutely incredible at, you know, conversing with people just about any topic, getting, you know, just picking up on information and being able to dive deeper into it. Blue and I have both been on there, Blue having been on there for one episode and I having been on there for two. And again, it's such a huge inspiration as to why I wanted to do this, just to give people, you know, a time to talk about their favorite anime. So again, thank you for having Blue and I both on there. We greatly appreciate it. And we also really appreciate you coming on here and taking the time to sit down and talk with me for, good Lord, almost 2 hours.
I know, right? I was looking at the time. I was like, oh my gosh, this could be time to be watching Azumanga Daioh while I'm doing work. What am I doing talking to Brad when I have clearly other anime to be watching and getting back into? But no, it has been my pleasure. It's rare that I'm on the other side of things, so I had to make sure, you know, that I was trying to not dominate that conversation of like, well, let's do this and let's figure what's going on here. No, I gotta let Brad run the show. This is Brad's podcast, not mine.
You absolutely could have taken over at any point. Don't let me stop you. You are
welcome to the sultry stylings of B&B Anime. Oh yes. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Welcome to the funhouse. Oh, but David, thank you so much again for joining me on this. I really appreciate it. All of his socials will be in the descriptions, literally everywhere, because this is the only show that makes it onto both feeds, as far as, you know, all the, you know, both the podcast and YouTube feed. Everything else is either exclusive to one or the other, minus the actual podcast itself. So yeah, links will be everywhere. Do check him out. I highly, highly recommend it. Thank you all so much for listening and or watching. I got to remember to say that. And we will see you in the next one. Bye-bye. Where's the stop button? There's the stop button.